Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello?
My intro music.
Welcome. This is your host, Phoenix, the Urban Sexologist. I'm on CultureSignRadio.com, where urban culture lives. And today's show is Let's Talk About Sex, but we're going to talk about something a little bit deeper than sex and sexuality. But, you know, most people have to understand I'm a sexologist, but I don't just talk about sex. I talk about a lot of things, especially things that are urban and things that touch our community. So today, our subject is a series, which I'm talking about fixing us. And fixing us means fixing our community. And I currently live in North New Jersey in a resident area of East Orange, Jersey City, Elizabeth, and all this area is urban, and we have a lot of issues that we would like to address today. I have some special guests today, people that I know, people who are very important to me, people who definitely affect our community, and people who can help us with some of these problems that we have and maybe have some solutions. So I want to kind of go over some of the history of the area. So we're in North New Jersey and the surrounding area, which is Jersey City. And Newark has, you know, started out as a very thriving city in the 20s. Everyone was coming, it was the industrial age, and people were coming here. And then a lot of Black people were coming here, migrating from the South to have their businesses. But then, you know, a lot of the white people started moving out of the area with the urban sprawl and leaving a lot of the Black people in the Black community, the brown community, stuck inside the urban areas where they couldn't get out. And poverty was thick and crime was thick. And there was a lot of things going on, which made a turbulent situation, which eventually turned into the riots. And we never really recovered from the riots. Crime was high, drugs were high. After Vietnam, people came back addicted to drugs. Poverty was high. There was a lot of young people having children out of wedlock, a lot of unwed mothers, housing, people living in tenement housing. And all of this culmination created the riots. And then after the riots, a lot of people didn't want to rebuild. So the people that were kind of trapped in this situation. But what I want to talk about is not necessarily the situation that a lot of people were trapped in, but the situation as it is now and how can we come out of it. So we can't expect our community to just heal itself. We have to look towards our leadership, our community people, and people who care about what's going on for solutions. You know, solutions might not always be in government. Solutions might not always be in policing. Some of the solutions have to come from us. So today's show is about fixing us. It's just me talking to some people who I think are very important in the community and their opinions on, you know, some of the things that are going on. My main concern as a sexologist is with all of these different problems that we have going on as a sexologist, I'm concerned about our young people. I'm concerned about the STD rate that's going through the roof with diseases that are really out of control, and some of them are now incurable. I'm concerned about, you know, the poverty rate. We have Deputy Mayor Rahma Mohammed as a guest. We have an officer who I won't say his whole name because we have to protect our officers, but we'll call him Officer Harris. He's here, a longtime North resident, a veteran police officer. We also have Tina Null. She's from Jersey City. She runs and operates a community center in Jersey City, Community Treasures. She does a lot of things for the community. So I brought these people together, I brought these people together because we have a lot of issues, and some of these things maybe we can talk it out, you know, as far as community leaders, activists, concerned people, police officers, political people, to try to figure out some of these problems in our community and ways that we think that we can better our community. So I'm gonna introduce who would like to speak first. We got Mr. Harris, Officer Harris. Hi, Officer Harris, how are you today, this evening?
All right, how you doing?
I'm good, I'm glad you could join us. You know, you heard our topic. Our topic is fixing us. And I thought it was important to have you on the show, not just because I know you, because you're a long-term Newark resident. You're not one of the officers that have moved out of the city. You know exactly what the city is. You've been in the city for a long time. Were you born in the city?
Yes, I was.
Okay, born and raised in Newark, which is a rarity. Most of the officers move out of the city because, you know, the crime and their job is so hard and rigorous and dangerous. And, you know, recently I know you had an incident where you had to defend yourself. So it's not like the issue isn't there. But since you're so, you know, you're on the front lines on both ends, what do you think, you know, as far as the community person that could be done in a situation?
I think first and foremost, the problem has to start be fixing at home first with the parents.
Okay.
And, you know, you got to teach your child, your children right from wrong. Most of the kids don't understand right from wrong. And that, I think, is based on mental illness. And that's
illness.
The problem. And that's a lot of things that's not addressed about mental illness. A lot of these children have to take medicine. They have to be evaluated. And they were doing that in the school system, from my understanding. They stopped that program to stop seeing what child is mentally ill that's not capable of learning like the rest of the children.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you, as an officer and, you know, a resident of Newark, when you encounter someone you feel like is in a situation, in a mental state that's not, you know, coherent, how do you... You as an officer, you have your job to do. How did you handle that? Because, you know, with all of the things going on, you know, especially, let me add, for people who don't know, Officer Harris is a black officer, so he has a triple threat. He lives in Newark, he's an officer, and he's black. So how would you handle, you know, a situation, these your own people, you know, trying to manage being on the job and just being a citizen?
Well, if they break the law, they still have to, that has to be addressed. But, you know, sometimes we take them to the UMDNJ to get evaluated, but that still don't exempt the fact that they committed the crime. So that still has to be addressed. But, you know, once they take their medicine, well, besides not taking the medicine, and a lot of these people taking that with K2 drugs or whatever drugs they're taking, so that's putting them in a whole different type of state of mind. So, you know, again, it addresses back to the home base. You know, what are your parents teaching? What are your parents giving you morals, your beliefs and everything like that? And if that's not addressed, you have kids that's just running wild. That's with the crime. That's with the sex. Like you addressed that, the high STDs, you know, they feel as though they can just do and have anything they want without any precautions.
Exactly. Well, I think you're doing a very good job. I know you personally, and I know your mentality on the street. You really care, and you know, you take the time, and it's a hard job. You know, you definitely have a hard job. So I want you to sit there tight, and let me see who else is on the line. Do we have Tina Knowles on the line? Is Tina Knowles on the line, or do we have Rahman Muhammad?
What's going on, Phoenix?
Hey, how are you? I'm glad you can make it. So I don't know if you caught the beginning of the topic, but we're talking about. Okay, some of the firsthand. Are you born and raised in North? I know you've been in North for a long time, but are you born and raised?
I was born and raised, but for the record, I just want to be clear. I actually called to talk about sex. I don't know what you're talking about, but I know we're talking about sex.
We are talking about sex.
You're getting a little deep on me.
How sexuality is being affected by all of this trauma in our community. Come on. You're trying to stay focused. This is about
meeting
our people so we can have
sex.
Help me
to
help you.
You're a little deep on me. Yeah, no, I was born and raised in the city of North. Born and raised.
Okay, so
you know,
what I'm
saying? Did my crimes in Newark and became successful in Newark.
Most definitely. So you know both sides, and it's good to talk to you because a lot of people that might be in certain situations might feel like there's no way out. They gotta run this path and that's it. But you are proof that you have options.
Yeah.
There's so many options out there.
Yeah, I think the most important part is that people have to. I think what we tend to do is we're in our own way at times. I think that we have to learn to get out of our way. You know, individuals do believe. Unfortunately, I mean, my responsibility to the city is trying to connect North residents with jobs, and you know, I think we put too many excuses in our success, and so we're always blaming someone or something. Or some sort of imaginary policy or societal problems. You know, when I was out in the street, I remember blaming the white man for me being on the corner selling drugs until I began to realize it wasn't no white man telling me to sell drugs. It was me saying that. And so it took me to stop it no more than it took me to actually start doing it. And so I think that when we put these excuses, when we allow for people to put excuses to us, and then we begin to accept these excuses, it begins to hold us back from the things that we can be doing. And I think that with just a little hustle, a little change in your mentality, anybody can be successful. You know, there are barriers out there. People do need extra help with those barriers. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, somebody can only hold your hand but so far and walk with you, you have to walk yourself at some point. And I think that more than many times that we waiting for somebody else to do all the work for us while we reap the benefits. And it just doesn't work that way. You have to put some of it in for yourself.
When does a person come to that type of conclusion? Like, I know an instance with Officer Harris recently. He had some young people that tried to rob him, didn't know he was an officer, and you know how quickly that escalated. But, you know, when do you feel like these young people who have been listening to the music, led astray, I know what you said, but you know I'm the empathetic person, and, you know, then they come upon what they feel like is opportunity, which really is going to end their career as being a normal human being, you know, when do you feel like, you know, when do they get a pass? If they had a terrible life, you know what I'm saying, and they had all these things happen, when do you cross over to, okay, I'm a good guy now, or I want to be a good guy now?
See, I just think that's an excuse for me, right? I think I had a terrible life, you know what I'm saying? My mother was a dope fiend. I didn't know my real biological father. I had a stepfather who died, you know, he came to my life at 5 years old, died when I was 13. I left home at 16 years old because my mother wasn't able to provide. It was 13 of us. We probably lived in every ward in the city, then put out multiple apartments because it was 13 of us. And, you know, we had to lie on the landlords about, you know what I'm saying, how many people was living in the house. And then when they found out how many people was living in the house, they put us out. At one point in time, we lived in an abandoned building for 2 weeks until an apartment was ready for us. So listen, I just think it's excuses. If you were born and raised in the city of North, more than likely, you've had a rough time growing up. That should not give you an excuse not to want to be successful and not to want to change your life. For me, it took a near-death experience for me to do it. I don't know what it'll take for others. Listen, all my brothers went to prison, every one of them. one of my brothers lost his life, you know what I'm saying, to the streets. And so I don't know, you know, I was the lucky one, you know what I'm saying, that I was able to get out and do some things and make some change in my life before it would have happened.
To you, eventually.
Or death. Right. It would have happened, right? And so that's the road, right? So that you know, I can guarantee anybody in the streets, anybody out there, that there are two possibilities that's going to happen to you. One, death, and the other, other is imprisonment. There's no successful retired drug dealer or robber or murderer, you know what I'm saying, that's out there in the world today. And so we have to begin to understand at some point in our life, we have to change. And listen, for some, it's too late to make that change. There are some people, yeah, unfortunately, that's just going to pay the consequences of their action. And then hopefully there are some people that listen to what you're saying or what I'm saying or what the officer's saying, and that is, you know what, let me change my life and try to go on a different path. Listen, I talk to kids every day coming from prison. I talk to gang members. Some of them want to hear, some of them don't. But most of the time, from what my experience with them, it's not that they don't want to change. It's that they don't want to put the work in to change. And that's the problem.
So a young person comes into your office and says, look, I was in a DIFAS, you know, situation. I was in the system, and, you know, I'm on the edge. What can a person, you know, of your power do, you know, for a person?
Yeah,
even if it's just, you know, a direction. It doesn't have to be, you know, get them a job, because I don't think that's always the answer if the person is not even on that level, because it might be something else that they need. A lot of these young people, they need their mothers. They need their fathers. Yes.
I agree with Rockman. I agree with Rockman. So first you have to have it within yourself that I want to change. I want to do better. You can sit there and you can lead the horse to water, but I don't mean the horse necessarily drink it. So you have to want to have that within yourself that I don't want to do this anymore. I want to, it's something better than me being out here in the streets.
Well, let me ask you this, Officer Harris. The situation happened with you and, you know, those young people. If you had the opportunity to talk to them right now, they're listening right now, what would you say to them? Because you know, I'm an empathetic person. I believe for whatever reason, they made a serious mistake. You know what I'm saying? Whoever came up with the idea, they came up with a bad idea all the way around. Because anybody would have said, you know, I got this idea to do this, somebody said that is crazy. But if you had,
well, we all made bad decisions in our lifetime.
Yeah.
I'm gonna repeat what this Robin said. There's only two ways out of this. Either three ways actually. You get out, or you go to jail, or you die out here in the streets. And nobody wants to die. They say they want to die. I'm down with it, but they not. Everybody wants to live. So if you want to live, look for a different avenue. And anything worth having is not easy. Like he said, they don't want to put in the work. They want something given to them, and they want that overnight success. And it doesn't happen that way. You have to put in, you have to work. You have to sweat. You have to bleed this stuff out here and you know, strive to be a better person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about my, you know, the officer is absolutely correct. Don't nobody want to die. I think about me and my partner who was in the streets together. That's exactly what we used to say, right? Also, we used to be in the car together, and we would be riding, and we would be telling each other, "Would you avenge me if I die before you?" Right? And so we had this death wish because we knew what we were doing was going in that direction, either jail or death. That's what we was doing, and so we were actually every single day or practically every day, we would actually talk about our death as if that was some sort of goal that we were trying to reach. If I die before you, would you avenge me if I die? And then when the incident, like I said, my near-death experience happened, like the officer said, I didn't want to die. And so I, you know, decided
when you
to
realize
get out again.
That.
Right, when
you
I realized death was coming.
Die. Well,
right.
how old were you when you realized this, when you came to this?
I was 19 years old when that situation happened. And when I realized that was, I had just had a son. I had just had a son. I was leaving his house, and you know, an incident occurred that scared the bejeebus out of me. It was a mistaken identity situation too, by the way, because I really didn't make enemies in the streets. It just goes to show you, it don't necessarily have to be a situation where, you know, it involves you, right? The situation with me actually was a mistaken identity situation. And so I realized at the time when I had my child, like, you know, I want to see this kid grow up. You know, I have to do something different. So when I got out the street, the first job I had was maintenance. You know what I'm saying? I was cleaning up the projects. And so I had to, you know, and my partner who was, you know what I'm saying, with me at the time, that, you know, we were in the car, like I said, with these death wishes. You know, I asked him to come with me to actually get a job, and he said no. But guess where he's at today? He's dead. Mm. He has five kids. His daughter is my goddaughter. My son was his godson. And right now I'm helping his daughter, who has four kids of her own. You know what I'm saying? You know, her father's not here. She, because her father wasn't here, she had babies since she was 16 years old. By dudes that's not taking care of them. She was shot in the neck. She has a gun charge. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, these, you know, this is the situation, right? And so now I got to try to help my goddaughter, you know, one, because her father's not here to help her. You know, these are the decisions that we make. These are the consequences that occur to our family when we don't decide to change. And so, you know, I don't, you know, I would give this, the guy who comes in my office, Phoenix, the question you asked, what would I do? The guy who says he was from a foster home, I would do the same thing I would say from the person who said they went to school, graduated high school, went to college, and they came to my office looking for assistance, right? You know, give them some help.
You wouldn't give them any type of, you wouldn't look at them differently or give them that.
No, I would not.
No?
I mean, I think, listen, I give, I'm consistent. With me, when you come into my office, whether you're the college graduate or whether you're the kid on the street, I'm consistent with how I speak to you as far as, you know what I'm saying, getting your help. I may not have to go as far with the individual who has a high school diploma or, you know what I'm saying, went to some college. I may have to go deep with them, but I pretty much, I'm consistent with what, I, you know what I'm saying, what I say and how I behave, because I don't believe in treating anybody any different. I don't think we have
I hear you,
but
I know you, so I disagree. I disagree.
Yeah, I
have seen you go out of your way for people, so I don't know about that. I have seen you.
It's a difference between going out of your way. Like I said, there are special individuals that you do more for, but I'm consistent on what help they need and the direction they go is what I'm saying to you. So I don't give that person an opportunity to continuously make that an excuse. I'll hear them out. I'll listen to what they have to say, and then I give them my story. You know what I'm saying? And I say to them, listen, look where I'm sitting today, right? My story is not that far different from what many of their stories. I was in foster care when I was a kid. My mother lost us when we was kids. We was in foster care when we was kids because of my mother's substance abuse problem at the time. And so,
well,
I mean, we
so
all
how did you
have
learn
horror
how to
stories.
Be so eloquent and be able to negotiate. I mean, I'm sure that came from the street, being able to negotiate and, you know, make deals, so to speak, because everyone doesn't have these kind of skills. You know, a lot of people on the street don't have this type of makeup. I didn't come from the best background either. I definitely was on the street myself, but it was my humble beginnings. It was me being raised in al-Islam that gave me a certain set of rules that I didn't adhere to and was able to save myself, so to speak. But I do wish that, you know, someone would have looked at me and said, oh, you know what? Let me help her out. You know what I'm saying? I feel, and that's the reason why I'm doing stuff like this show and why I donate my time and why I do so much is because I firmly believe that my mission and my job is to help other people like me. I'm helping myself. When I see that young person in the street that needs help and I can see they need help even if they don't ask for help, I'm helping myself. So being that you was that brother on the street that was lost and didn't have your way, you know, I heard what you said, but I know you, and I also know the type of person and what kind of heart you have. Both of you, Officer Harris and Mr. Muhammad, And I think that your response would be a little bit different. I have seen both of you come to people's aid when they were in need, even when they didn't tell you they were in need. You still came to their aid. You still said, you know what? All right, I'm going to help.
Hey, it's the same game, different players, that's all. And you want to help these people, you know, because, again, as a race of and I don't want to start going to black, white, and everything, but just for us, you don't want to see these young black men and women left behind. You know, you want them to achieve. You want them to keep, go out there and thrive and make something of themselves and better themselves. You know, it's more than life than just the corner. And you know, for somebody like Wildman with his story, you know, I didn't have that story and everything. You know, I had my mother and my father and everything, but it's also those people from home like that won't go out there and think it's, you know, a glorified look to be out there in the street, and it's not, and everything.
No. So, but even though you had your mother and your father, you still have had to deal with and face the same issues because you're still in the mix with these people.
As what you just said, if you live in the city, you're dealing with everything. And that's just how it is. And, you know, you got to make the decision at the end of the day is yours. You know, whatever will wake you up, whatever drives you to say, you know, I'm going out here and I'm gonna go to school, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to become the president of the union, something like that. You know, it's within yourself.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I never thought my path would be what my path would. Like, if somebody would have told me I was going to be a union leader, I would have laughed them out of their shoes. Like, I didn't even know what unions were when I was coming up, right? I went in the street for survival. I mean, that's just the reality with me. You know, the funny thing, though, about my life is I actually went to work first before I went to the street, right? I was working at the age of 13 years old. I was working at the age of 13 years old. I went to work when I left. The first time I left home at 16 years old, I actually went to work. I actually worked at a beer company on Vanderpool Street. I was driving beer trucks at 16 years old without driving license. I worked for this company called Farmer. And I was
see, you,
driving
see,
beer
you
trucks.
Was lucky because back
but,
then you could get away with stuff like that. Not now.
Yeah, right. I was driving beer trucks. I'm talking about up and down. I was doing long distance deliveries, driving Atlantic City, Philadelphia, Camden. I mean, I was doing long distance runs with beer at the age of 16 years old. But the deal was, what got me out of that was the guy. Because of my age, because he knew I didn't have a job, like, he wasn't really paying me. And so I went in the streets, really, it was survival tactic. I didn't want to be in the streets. It wasn't something that, I mean, my natural course of doing business was actually me going to work. That was the first thing I actually did because my stepfather was a hustler. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Everything, when he raised us in Islam, but he also, he was a hustler. You know what I'm saying? He went out and found the way to feed us. If he had to sell slum jewelry, we used to sell Bilalia newses on the corner, bean pie. We used to go to the farm to get a U-Haul truck, get a truck full of fruit, and go to Harlem and sell fruit. We had icy trucks. I mean, there was different ways that he taught us, you know what I'm saying, about work ethics and about hustle. And because we had to do it to eat. And so me going to work was one form of way of doing it. And when I saw that wasn't providing, you know what I'm saying, I turned to the street. Another part of my life that I really don't share with people too much is a big part why when I left home at first, I went to take care of two friends of mine who were in wheelchairs. They had multiple dystrophy. Both of them, you know, I don't know if you know what multiple dystrophy is, but it's a muscle disorder. And both of my friends, they were two friends, childhood friends of mine. When they moved from their mother, they moved into these handicapped apartments where they were supposed to be trying to be independent. However, they still had to have 24-hour care. And so although they had a nurse that came on in the morning time, they really didn't have anybody to take care of them at night. And literally, you know, I had to dress them, feed them, put them in the tub, take them to the bathroom, put them in the bed, get them out the bed, get them dressed. I mean, you know, this was part of my life for about 3 years before they both passed on. Wow. You know what I'm saying? This was a big part of my life.
I know you got a big heart, Rahman. I know you have a big old heart because I know you.
Yeah,
but I think we have our other guest. Who was that?
Is she on?
Hello?
Hey, guys.
Hi, sorry, you guys. I'm going to introduce Ms. Tina Knoll from Jersey City, who's also the owner-operator of Community Chess. She's a community nonprofit organization out of Jersey City, which I like to frequent all the time. And she's one of the panelists, you know, so I want her to contribute to the conversation. You probably missed the beginning part because we're having some technical difficulties in the background, but we're still going on. We're talking about, you know, some of the issues in the urban situation that we have called Newark, New Jersey, and Jersey City. And my question to them was, you know, how can these young people come out of this situation? They're not so empathetic as I am. You know, I have a kind heart and I like to help everybody. Their mentality is kind of like pull them up from the bootstraps and keep it going. But my mentality is, if you don't have no boots, I mean, I don't know where you're going. But what's your take on it? You have a huge heart, Tina. It's two guys and it's two females now. Thank you. I'm glad you joined us. And your mentality, and I know what you do for the community. You give out free clothes. You give out free food. You have all type of events for the community. You really do a lot for young people. And you do all this out of your own pocket. And it's not like you're rich by any means. Everything you do is definitely from your heart. So if you could speak on a little bit, and mind you, just want to add, Ms. Knoll, a married woman, she makes a sacrifice to take away from her family, her husband, to do a lot of these things, which, you know, in any relationship could be stressful, let alone when you're not getting paid for it and you're doing things, you know, out of your own, the kindness of your own heart. So just, you know, tell us a little bit about you and then jump into this conversation because, you know, they beat me up over here.
Hey guys, how y'all doing? Yes, exactly. I'm definitely into the community and I stand out there. That's the reason why I do that, so we can know exactly more about what's going on in the community. People could assume what's going on, but if you really speak into the community and seeing exactly what's going on, you'll know what they mean and why they out there and stuff. And it's not a lot of training. There's not a lot of different things for these young guys. And I talk to them. They don't want to do what they're doing, but if it's no jobs, I hear hiring them, showing them what to do and stuff like that, it'd be kind of difficult. Most of the time they be out there on Saturdays with me getting clothes to try to find interviews and stuff like that. I have family members and fathers. The same thing, be looking for some type of help and skill. So it's definitely hard. That's the reason why I started this. I started just doing it once a month, and now I do it every Saturday. And not me just giving the clothes, I'm out there just talking to them to find out what we could do, what's the solution of me just assuming what it is. So I was listening to the conversation of what y'all was talking about.
Okay, yeah, because you know my attitude. My attitude is, you know, from a personal standpoint, is that I had an extremely hard life, but I'm a very optimistic person. Most people that meet me will not know, you know, all that I've been through, but I always try to keep it positive because somebody could be worse than me, and with all the people that I know I can help somebody. That's my mentality.
But again, at the end of the day, I just heard what Rodman and Sam listen what you saying. I don't know Tina's background about her upbringing, but it's still
a
foundation. That's where my family's from.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I had a hard life. I'm from Alabama, Birmingham. My real mother passed at 28. I came up here when I was like young, like around 8 or 9, and my mother's sister brought me up here. So it wasn't an easy life for me. I seen two different lifestyles. I went from me being the only child from my mother, so I had to fit into other people's family homes. So when you come into other people's life, it's kind of difficult. So what it was, thank God, they believed in praying and stuff like that and turning my life around, because if not, if it wasn't no praying, yo, I would have been off the hook. If it wasn't nobody out there for me to talk to, I would. People don't have that out here to be able to talk. Too many people want to judge you instead of just listening to you and telling me how to redirect my life or what to do. I don't want to hear, oh, yeah, you should do this. I want to see what did you do and how did you turn your life around. And I let them know, like, nah, yo, I had a hard time. I'm like, yeah, I'm a teacher now, teacher assistant, but it took a lot of praying. It took a lot of people listening to what I was going through. It took a lot of people not judging me and showing me that right way. So it you have to be. Go ahead. You want to say something?
I hear that. But again, when you listen to all what we're saying, we all had some foundation. Whether you strayed off, the initial thing was the foundation. Rockman with his stepfather, taking him out there hustling and showing him how to get that dollar. You have to have a foundation with you and your family praying for you. Family with your mom being a teacher and your grandmother and your grandfather out there working. You have to have some type of foundation to build upon. Now, sometimes, like I said, you can veer off and go off a different path, but if you got that foundation, you can always come back to it and stand on it and rebuild. The problem is a lot of these kids out here don't have a foundation.
You're right.
Or praying in the home. Once you got a foundation, you can build on top of it. So if it ain't there, go ahead.
Let me ask you this, because we moving, we coming somewhere. The thing is that we know all of the kids don't have a foundation, especially in this area that we're talking about.
Right.
What can we do as concerned people and citizens and activists and political people? What can we do to start the conversation to maybe not even get the young people motivated, but just from our
All you can do is say one person at one time. You can't save everybody. One person at a time and take it from there.
That's exactly what everybody's doing out there in the community. Thank God, like, I see a lot of people, like, I had like three events yesterday, people getting out there, giving out free stuff, not just walking past them, talking to them, finding out why they out there, what's going on. I think if people be more involved in their community, things will be able to go and showing them. Maybe they don't have that. I believe that right now so many parents and fathers working two and three jobs, they don't even have time raising their kids. I tell you, sometimes the kids be at my school a long time because parents got, to work two jobs just to make things meet and end. So they don't even have time raising their kids. So I think that's a lot of reason why ain't no grandparents out here doing stuff like that. So I think by everybody jumping into the community and helping everybody, trying to help with their kids. And so I think that things will get better. Instead of talking about it and us doing about it, I think things will get better.
The reason why I have these type of conversations is just to open up the conversation, because it needs to be had about some of the issues. Like, that was a good one that you just said, that a lot of these parents, they overwork. They work in two and three jobs to make their ends meet, and they have maybe 2.3 kids, maybe their niece or their nephew, somebody else's kids, and they don't really have time, so the kids are raising themselves, and then next you know, they're raising themselves. Now they're having sex underage, and now somebody's pregnant, and now we got to deal with being on a system or maybe hustling in the street to make ends meet for this new addition to the family, and that's how it goes. I just think that as professional people, we all have our professions and our areas that if we come together with like with me, say I meet a young person and I realize they may have a situation and they might be on the edge, I might call Officer Harris and say, could you talk to this person for me, because maybe they need to look up to a man. It could be something that simple.
Right.
And that's how you start the conversation and you keep, it going. Or I might say, a young person that might have their high school diploma and they might be job ready. In that case, I could call Mr. Rothman and see, you know, if he has any job programs available, and I could send that person down that channel. It's that easy. We all know people. So at the end of the day, that is what we can do. It might not be actually getting them a job. It might not be actually feeding them. But my background is working with homeless people, so I know where all the shelters are. So if somebody said they need food, I know where all the shelters are. I could definitely direct them. So
right.
It could be that simple. Mr. Muhammad.
Yes.
So since I made that reference, is that something that you think would be plausible, or I know you're so opinionated.
I mean, teachers own the way they assist people. I'm just in a, you know, my life right now is in a different role, right? So, you know, I'm really in a different mood on how I address, you know, individuals today. And that's just because, one, I'm getting older. My patience is tolerance is really getting, for BS is really getting limited. And so I'm a little bit more sterner now. I don't accept as many excuses anymore. There's no question that I tend to help people. Heck, I come out of my own pocket to assist people. So that I'm probably going to do for the rest of my life. But the question, though, is that, to me, we have to get away from giving people this comfortability of always having the reason or why it is that their life is the way it is. Because to me, I got to be honest with you. I think at some point when you're able to control your life path, that, you know, so you're the reason why your life is the way it is. You know, I recognize that in a teenager, and it's time other people recognize that too. You cannot tell me that, you know, I got individuals right now that come home, we get them jobs, we get them assistance, send them to training, and then they still be in the street. And then they wind up getting locked up, arrested, carry gun charges. They use the job to turn around here and re-up on drugs. Now, how is that?
They didn't want to go.
Right. That
means they didn't want to turn their life around. That don't mean
that's
why people say to me, oh, yeah, just in case people sell your clothes, oh, well, I just got to leave that and go ahead. They're going to be judged for that. I did this out of the kind of my heart. So you did that out of your heart.
Again, that's what he said. It's on you at the end of the day. It's you. It's your decision. It's your mental state, what you decide I'm going to do and everything. And another thing I was just thinking about, a lot of everybody not going to go to college. And what these young folks and young ladies need to do is go out and get a trade. And that's not a bad thing. Get a trade. At least you can get a living off of that.
Yep, I did a trade too. Yep, it's not a bad thing. You're right.
Okay. Well, I am very I don't know. I'm just listening. I'm stuck right now. I didn't know, Rockman, you know, you had grown so hard. I'm gonna have to work on you.
I gotta be honest with you, I'm probably not going to change the way I'm going now, because I just see too many people, even when you help them, that they still straight out, you know. Heck, I took a young man that came to me who had some issues. Went and bought him things, put him in the gym, got out my own pocket, bought him clothes, bought him boxing things. I mean, just took this young man and, like, called myself mentoring, got him a job at my wife's company. Heck, this young man went and pulled his pants down in front of my wife. So, you know, at some point, you know what I'm saying, you have to. And I still didn't treat the young man bad afterwards, by the way. I still existed him. You know what I'm saying? I told my wife not to call the cops on him. You know what I'm saying? Let me handle him. And so, you know, at some point, people's actions is going to deal with the consequences that come for them. And if you don't understand that at some point in your life, it just may be too late, like it was late for my brother. Listen, my brother got killed on the day he was supposed to start work. He was murdered on the day I got him a job. He was actually supposed to start work on that Monday that he got killed. But because he didn't go to work and he went in a different direction, he was murdered. You know, and so at some point, you know what I'm saying, you have to understand that, you know, your life, you know, is in your hands. You know, when we buried my brother,
I like to hold people accountable. I call my youngest son whenever he does anything and he says, well, they did this. And I always tell him, it's your fault. It's always
exactly. You know what to do and what not to do.
Exactly. My whole thing is for us as African-American, and I pull all you people together for a reason, is because, and I know you're going to disagree with me, but I feel that regardless of what these people do, whether they follow the right path or not, they still deserve our empathy. They still deserve our understanding. Yep. Whether they go the wrong place or not, we understand why. We can't walk around saying we don't know how they got there or we don't
know. I thank God somebody that came around. Just imagine the people that did try to help me. They didn't give up because somebody else messed them up. Like, we got to keep trying regardless of what. Like, I've been doing this for 7 years, giving out free clothes. Me and my husband, we wash them. I go pick them up. I messed up 2 cars for us doing that. Don't nobody help me. My community don't really, like, they donate clothes and stuff. My mayor and them, none of them. Now they're getting involved in it because I did, like, prom dresses I gave away and a newspaper came and seen that and stuff like that. But we do this out our kind of our heart. And people and I never gave up. Thank God.
Yes, you guys didn't gave up. You are crotchety.
I agree with you. Everybody's entitled to a mistake, maybe two, maybe three. But when do you, again, I have to agree with Robin, when do you say enough is enough?
I
had other people that stood outside and said, by me getting clothes for you, I was able to buy a house. So just because other people messed up in life.
And again, that's the person decided that they want to do something productive.
I'm not going to sit up there and say everything is so bad. No, good things happen. People cry in front of me. People give me hugs. People come with their kids with no coats on. And then I get people that do dumb stuff. So I'm not going to sit up. It's just like with God. God forgives everybody. Every night when we get up, he forgave us for what the sins we did. You're not going to tell me that you do good all the time. No, we human. We all mess up. So we have to say that, you know what, about the next day, we have to forgive and move on with it. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And God know at the kind of your heart, you know what? So what? They messed up. You know, Tom, Dom, or whatever, they forgave and they continue to help people. That's what we need. We need positive people.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I want to go be bad now.
Here's my take on that, right? One is,
what's your take?
I don't want us to get into this.
Okay, what's your take,
Ms. Mohammed? I don't want us to get into the whole week, so what, they messed up stuff. I think that's the problem in our community now. I think we begin to accept these mistakes as being normal, and it's not normal behavior, right? And so we got to get away from that. And I'm saying that because as deputy mayor, I see too much of that. And at some point, that has to stop, right? We can't keep shooting and killing each other, robbing each other, carjacking each other, selling poison to one another, and then say, so what, we messed up. As if, you know what I'm saying, that's just something that is normal behavior. No, it's not. I'm sorry. I just can't accept that anymore.
No, because we
and so there's no question. Hold on, wait a minute. Let me say my piece here, right? So listen, I'm always have empathy. You know what I'm saying? I empathize with a whole lot of folks. So, you know what I'm saying? I empathize with my community. Shit, I empathize with my situation. Like you said, I don't live a perfect life. You know what I'm saying? So I'm always have empathy, right? But I'm going to say it again. At some point, even when you have empathy for what an individual is going through or have gone through, right? At some point, you have to put accountability before them. And you have to say to them, yes, I've listened to you. I hear you. I agree with you. I may have to do some extraordinary things with you to get you over a hump. But here's the thing. You have to take the lead in getting this done for yourself. It is the problem is that we allow for people to make excuses on why they don't do the work to change themselves. We allow for them. And so the individual that walks into my office and says, I want a job. I need assistance. And I go through their background. I talk to them, and then I put them on the right path. But then they don't start the path, or they don't complete the path. Can't turn around later on and say, you didn't have empathy for me. No. I can't do it.
Exactly.
Let me be clear on what I mean by empathy, because people have misconstrued that whole word. Empathy is not sympathy. Empathy means you understand their plight. It doesn't mean you sympathize with it. It means you understand their plight and you know why it is that way. Like, I've heard people in the hood say, oh, they crazy. I don't know why they act like that. They mama didn't raise them like that. But in the same breath, they know their mother was on drugs. They know their mother was an alcoholic. They know they lived in a messed up house and was being abused. So you do know. So I do empathize with it. I do not accept that we have to be this way. This is the reason why my mission is what it is, and the reason why I'm being so tenacious about it, because believe me,
again, it's on that individual whether they want to change. We all just can't keep holding hands and everything. Even a bird kicked a little bird out the nest.
Yeah, well, that's part of human nature, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about empathy. Empathy means you understand.
I sit down, understand your problem, and then he put him on a path to get a job and everything.
Baby, put him on a path to anything like that. I just said understand why they're like that. You know, my job is a sex.
So you just stay stuck in that mold.
My job is not to do that. My job is to understand why they're doing it, so the next people that come after them can have a clear understanding, because everybody can't be saved. I'm not trying to save everybody. I'm trying to save
the world
who want
to
be saved.
We're just trying to show them.
And what I'm trying to do is make sure that the people that have clarity, understand where they came from, can move forward. Some of us is not going to make it. Some of us is going to be stuck. You give those people the rations that they need to do whatever they need to do, and you focus on the people who want to succeed, the people who make an effort, the people who show up to work. Those are the people you focus on. My job as a sexologist is to uncover what happened to them. You know, I'm like a forensic scientist, only I deal with a person's sexuality. And my thing is that with all of the stuff going on in the urban area, it always starts with the first thing when you're born. They decide if you're a boy or a girl, and then where you go from there. If you're a girl, you do this. If you're a boy, you do that. And that's what happens in the hood. And when you're a young girl in the hood, 9 times out of 10, and looking at statistics, is so great, you're going to be molested. You're going to be raped. You're going to be sexually assaulted. So how do you deal with something like that? You deal with it from the outside in. You look at the history, and then you go forward. I'm uncovering that these issues are wrong with the hood. So the people who want to know what's wrong with the hood can say, aha, this is what happened to me. Okay, I won't do that. I'm going to go over here. And that's what this whole conversation is about, solutions. We already know some people not going to make it. So we have an officer who's trained and has accomplished. We have a community activist who's doing her thing and helping the community and be a part of the community. And then we have Mr. Muhammad, who is a leadership. And, you know, with all of us, you know, putting our heads together, we have these conversations, and we can figure it out. I'm going to end the conversation because I'm getting the nod. I'm getting the bing that it's over. But I want to thank all my guests for taking the time out on Sunday. You could have been watching the American Music Awards, but you was on the phone talking to the urban sexologist. Thank you. To Mr. Harris, you be safe out there. You keep doing a good job. To Ms. Knowles.
Everybody be safe.
Yes, Ms. Knowles, I'm going to see you. Let me know when the next event is so we can make it. And we need to write some letters to our council people in Jersey City to understand what you're doing so you can get some help. And to Mr. Muhammad, I'm going to see you next week because we're going to continue this conversation one-on-one.
Man, I want to talk about sex next week.
Exactly. I got you. I got you. So, man, I hear you, Mr. Muhammad. I hear you. So, thank you all for coming on. Everyone's
you're welcome.
If you're interested, is on the website. If you're interested in reaching out to Mr. Muhammad, if you're interested in reaching out to Ms. Knowles, we protected Mr. Harris. He's under my protection right now. You can't talk to him except for these few minutes. And I hope everybody enjoyed themselves, and you know we all got heard. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
All right,
have a
care,
good night,
everybody.
Guys.
All right, man.
did not pick up on me. Come on.